It's 10:06. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. In Wisconsin, judicial elections are nonpartisan by law, but are they nonpartisan in fact? The past three elections for seats on the state's highest court have featured record or near-record spending, both by candidates themselves and by third-party groups trying to influence the elections. And the rhetoric has become increasingly partisan, leading some to question the impartiality of the court itself. One state Supreme Court justice has been asked to recuse himself 8 times by attorneys who claim that his campaign comments and campaign advertising demonstrate a bias against criminal defendants. Meanwhile, at the local level, trial judges are often appointed by the governor to fill unexpired terms, and they then go on to be elected and reelected, often without opposition. This hour, we're going to take a look at the way we choose judges in Wisconsin and talk about whether or not the system we use is the best one to produce impartial justice. My guest is Peter Raufus, Professor of Law, Associate Dean for Academic Affairs, and Director of Part-Time Legal Education at Marquette University. He joins me by phone. Good morning, Professor Raufus, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
The judges in Wisconsin are, by and large, elected. We don't have any appointed state judges at all, do we?
Well, again, that's not quite true. We have plenty of elected state judges, appointed state judges, appointed by governors, replacing retired or resigned judges, who then have to seek election and put themselves before the people. But as we've discussed recently, many state court judges in Wisconsin appear on the bench for the first time through gubernatorial appointment rather than through election.
But, I mean, they're supposed to be elected.
Well, yes, they are subject to election. That's
what our state
constitution says. But vacancies are filled by appointment without confirmation of either of the legislative bodies. So we need to be careful about overstating the case for judicial election.
Okay, I wanted to make sure I got that right, and because there are federal judges and they're all appointed. There aren't any elected federal judges.
Article 3 of the federal constitution makes all Article 3 judges, a federal trial and appellate judges, appointed by the president and subject to confirmation by the Senate. That's where the advise and consent clause comes from in our federal constitution. Yes.
Well, I think sometimes we get that confused because, the average person probably doesn't necessarily make a distinction there. And it does seem confusing sometimes. So the governor can appoint when there's an open seat or someone retires or resigns or passes away, God forbid. In the state of Wisconsin, the governor can fill that vacancy without any advice or consent from the state legislature.
Indeed, I think more strongly is required to might be the more appropriate language.
Okay. So that's the technical part of this. You know, this is what the law says. This is how things are supposed to go, and so forth. Judges are subject to election, and these elections, like elections for county treasurer and clerk of courts and county sheriff and so forth, these are nonpartisan election. What does that mean exactly?
It means that when you look at the ballot, when you walk into the voting booth, you will not see a judicial candidate in Wisconsin have a political party next to her or his name on the ballot.
But has that become sort of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of thing? Yes, say these elections are nonpartisan, but it's pretty easy to tell who's who.
Well, sometimes. I mean, the players in Wisconsin's state court elections, the big players, some, like the Wisconsin Education Association Council, WEAC, tend to support candidates of a particular stripe. Others, like the Wisconsin WMC, as we know, tend to support candidates of other types and spend on those candidates' behalf. So in some cases, yes, the nod, nod, wink, wink is appropriate and a fair description. In other cases, not so much.
Well, the I guess where I come into this, there was a story in a recent edition of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel concerning a Supreme Court justice whose election was a little controversial, who's been asked to recuse himself 8 times by attorneys who are concerned about comments that this sitting justice now, he was running for election then, made during his campaign about his attitude regarding criminal defendants. And does that concern you?
Not especially, no. When you ask the judges of your state to submit themselves to voters, the way that legislators, gubernatorial candidates, and the whole cluster of offices that you named earlier submit themselves to, it ought not surprise us that the tone of judicial campaigns has begun to resemble the tones of non-judicial campaigns. So it doesn't surprise me. Indeed, in many respects, it seems almost inevitable in our culture and the necessity to reach a statewide audience that we're going to have relatively simple messages like, I'm going to be tougher on crime than the other person. And so, no, this is not particularly surprising and ought not be.
I guess I was thinking, well, there's really no way to crawl into the mind of the voter as he or she goes into the booth and what they make their decisions based on. How much do you suppose the average person, what would your assumption be about what the average person understands about the job, for example, of a state Supreme Court justice?
Not much. And the average person, to use your phrase, is a person who often does not vote in judicial elections. Judicial elections tend to animate lawyers and folks who are connected with interest groups that are likely to have themselves or their members affected by what courts do. We don't get especially high turnout in judicial races, and I think you're right to suggest that the criteria by which we are to judge whether a judge is doing a good job or a poor job is not criteria that is widely discussed, not only not widely discussed by the average person in Wisconsin, by plenty of not-so-average people in Wisconsin. There's very little attention paid to what judges do once they get in office, and we don't have a cultural agreement on what makes a good judge.
What do you think makes a good judge?
I think what makes a good judge is a combination of a commitment to the rule of law, diligence, at an appellate level, the ability to work well with other people, to play nicely with others, not to exceed the boundaries of one's office, and to have an understanding of what the important role of judges is in both our state constitutional system and in the larger federal system. It's a job that is done most effectively, almost in solitary confinement, if you will, behind closed doors. The hard work of the judge is, particularly the appellate judge, is work done without anyone looking.
Yeah, just for the benefit, just to, maybe to help frame the discussion a little further, the Wisconsin's the court, the way the court's organized in Wisconsin from the bottom up, you start at what, the circuit level?
That's correct.
And then is there a state appeals court?
There is in the last generation. There is now an intermediate court of appeals. Correct.
And then the state Supreme Court.
That is correct.
Okay. And those appeals court judges also have to stand for election.
Absolutely. Every person, circuit judges, intermediate court of appeals judges, state Supreme Court justices, all, if they wish to keep their offices, even if they've been appointed by the governor, need to stand for election. That's correct.
I think I'd be pretty safe to say if we administered a quiz to everyone who's listening to this program right now and asked them to identify anybody on the state appeals court, any appeals court judge, well, I'd fail the quiz. I know that Governor Doyle has recently appointed Representative Gary Sherman to be an appeals court judge in Wisconsin. I know that because I know Gary Sherman. So, but other than that, I wouldn't be able to tell you. And I know that I could not name all of the justices on the state Supreme Court. For most of us, on a day-to-day basis, if we're not attorneys and we're not in court, we don't know who any of these people are. Does that help explain, for example, why so many circuit court judges run unopposed?
I don't think so. I don't think that there is a causal connection, and I think the two propositions that you've articulated don't necessarily connect. I remember a poll a decade or two ago, about 90% of America's youth could not name a member of the United States Supreme Court, but I don't think it has much to do with the means of selection. So no, I don't think that the fact that many in Wisconsin cannot name judges produces the situation of many judges running unopposed. I don't think the two are very much connected at all.
Why is it then that we have so many circuit court judges who have no opposition?
In some cases, it's the barriers to entry. It's the costs of running for office. In some cases, it's a disinclination to challenge a sitting member of the bench because the powers of incumbency, the advantages of incumbency, tend to be quite large, which is why many people wait for open races. A third is for many of the best lawyers, the job isn't particularly attractive. Our court systems have tended to be, in many respects, underfinanced. For many lawyers, particularly the role of a circuit judge, is one that many do not find especially appealing. And I think all that plays into why we see, and many other factors, why we see a substantial number of unopposed circuit court races.
Someone told me once that the law is not about right and wrong, justice and injustice. The law is about legal and illegal. Do you care to comment on that?
Not really. It's an interesting aphorism, but I'd want to absorb it first. I think the law is about justice and injustice. It is also about legal and illegal. The law is about many things. So I'm not sure from whom you got that. It's an interesting observation, but it doesn't particularly provoke me into a particular reaction.
Okay. I'm going to take a break. Let me give the phone number and then see who would like to join us. Do you have an issue with the fact that our court system, that judges are elected? Does that bother you at all? Do you care? Do you find the fact that our judicial elections, the statewide ones, have started to approach the level of partisanship that we see in elections for other statewide offices like governor and U.S. Senator and so forth. Does that concern you? Do you feel that the judicial system is impartial? And if so, why? And if not, does it bother you? Those are all things that we can discuss here the rest of this hour. My guest is Peter Rofus, Professor of Law, Associate Dean for Economic Affairs and Director of Part-Time Legal Education at Marquette University. The phone number is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email. The address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just about 22 minutes after 10 o'clock, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what's coming up later on today. After 2 on Talk of the Nation, author Alan Brinkley talks about his new biography of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. That's coming up later on Talk of the Nation after 2 o'clock today. This hour, we're talking about Wisconsin's system of putting judges in the seats. All of our judges stand for election in the state of Wisconsin. And that's become a little bit of an issue for some people because of the increasingly partisan-like or at least ideologically driven elections that we've had for state Supreme Court justice, for example, that have begun to reflect more of the language and the tone of other elected offices, offices that are perceived as more political than judgeships. And my guest this hour is Peter Rofus, Professor of Law, Associate Dean for Academic Affairs, and Director of Part-Time Legal Education at Marquette University. He joins me by phone. You can, too. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Professor, I wonder, do other states have a similar similar system to the one in Wisconsin? I'm pretty sure Minnesota does. I don't know about other states.
There are multiple ways of choosing justices. There's the of choosing state court judges. Many states do what Wisconsin does. I'm not fresh on the numbers anymore. There's the merit selection plan, where the candidate comes from an interview process and then stands for, if you will, a yes or no, a retention or non-retention election. But an awful lot of states now have the sort of pure elected approach for many, if not all, of their judges. Again, okay. We have to exclude federal judges.
Right.
Who are all appointed by the president and all confirmed by the Senate.
How important is it that the role of the judge be seen as impartial?
On the one hand, it's the foundation of our legal system. On the other hand, we live in a world when we know that judges are human beings, are individuals with particular preferences, biases, prejudices, and the like. And we expect, we hope, that our judges will look to the rule of law rather than inside to themselves for the solution to the vast majority of legal problems that come before them. So I think the answer is it's a foundation, it's a fundamental building block of our system that we see judges, and we have to be careful with our words, as quote-unquote impartial. I would agree with that, yes.
Do you think that given the tone of the last three elections for seats on the state Supreme Court, that perception has been damaged?
Actually, I don't. I think the work of the judge. When I think of three elections, I think in at least two of those three cases, I think those two elections did no damage to the perception of impartiality. They gave rise to provocative, interesting, controversial exchanges during the campaign. But I think when all was said and done, when the victorious justice emerged and put on the robes, I doubt very much the perception of impartiality was underscored. I'm not so sure about the third. So I think probably a mixed bag on the three elections that you're talking about.
Okay. Well, we have a full phone line, so we should take some phone calls. People want to join the discussion. Let's start with Betty in Glendale. Betty, good morning.
Good morning. I hope I'm not repeating any earlier material because I tuned in a little late.
Well, you're a first caller, so the floor is wide open.
I recently read that the new rule for recusal of Supreme Court judges in our state was accepted. And it turned out that the rule was actually authored by the very lobbyists who were involved in the dispute, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and the Wisconsin Realtors Association. Comment, please.
Yes, you've got most of it right, except for the fact that although initially accepted and promulgated verbatim, one justice, Justice Prosser, changed his mind in early December, and therefore the rule that had been promulgated by a 4-3 majority of the court is now in limbo. So you've got the story correct up until about 2.5 weeks ago. And yes, the fact, as many have commented in the news media, the fact that a majority of the court took a proposed recusal rule verbatim from folks who have substantial interest in the outcome of cases before that court has concerned many, and probably rightfully so.
Bendy, thanks for the call. Mark in Portage, you'll be next. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. My question is something that you kind of alluded to earlier, the fact that a lot of attorneys aren't really interested in a judgeship because of monetary remuneration. And that kind of begs the question, are the judges that we have now, I'm not saying all of them, but are some of them out there attorneys who couldn't make it in private practice?
I want to be delicate with my answer, because the quality of judges in this state, in my view, ranges from not so very competent to truly outstanding. There are people on the bench, in my view, who were not particularly distinguished lawyers. We don't want individuals seeking judgeships so that they can get better pay and better working conditions. We want people who want to be judges for reasons a bit more noble than that. But I agree with the caller in part that the quality of the bench in Wisconsin, and this can be said about the results of any selection plan for judges, is spotty. We have folks who are appointed for a host of different reasons, elected often after that without any opposition, and they range from people who work extraordinarily hard and produce high-quality work to folks who do a substantially less high-quality job.
Well, would it be fair to say that the qualities that would make a good attorney wouldn't necessarily make a good judge?
Oh, exactly. And we see this in political science literature. There's a famous book, The Qualities That Make a Good Presidential Candidate Don't Necessarily Make a Good President. I think some of what makes for a good attorney translates to being a good judge, and some doesn't. So I think that's right. I think the skill set for the different jobs, functions, lawyer on the one hand, judge on the other, and I think it is truly important to distinguish as to whether we're talking about trial judge, for instance, or appellate judge, because therein, again, a different set of skill sets are at work, not necessarily the same. So that's true. Good lawyers don't invariably make good judges. Often they do. But the skill sets are different. It's not entirely different. We often hire athletes to be coaches, former athletes to be managers of baseball teams, coaches of basketball teams. Often the outstanding athlete does not become the outstanding coach or manager. Different skill sets.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because yesterday we did a program. In fact, it was this hour yesterday. We did a program on Joe McCarthy, the famous manager of the Bronx Bombers of the 30s and 40s, the greatest baseball manager in history, if you look at all the statistics, and he never played in the major leagues.
I'm sorry I was out of state, by the way. I would have enjoyed hearing that. Who was your guest?
It was J.D. Thorne.
Oh, okay. I would have enjoyed hearing that.
You can go to our website, WPR.org, and go to the Kathleen Dunn page and listen to the whole thing online.
I will.
There's a bit of shameless promotion. just kind of continuing on this theme for just a moment, what makes a good judge? We lawyers, if you want to be an attorney, you have to go to law school and graduate, and you pass an examination that allows you to practice law. How do we train judges?
First of all, in Wisconsin, you may know that the graduates of the two law schools do not need to take a bar examination to become lawyers licensed in Wisconsin. They need to satisfy character and fitness requirements and essentially get their diplomas. I just want to clarify that, and that itself is a recurring piece of controversy. How do we train judges? There is a judicial college. There are, in Nevada, there are folks who go around and give lessons and instructions to judges on a variety of issues, how to write strong opinions, strong, effective opinions. So we do have judicial training, but often the most important training for judges comes on the job, both by learning by doing and by having de facto mentors and colleagues who assist one in getting acclimated to the bench, whether it's at the circuit court level, presiding over trials, deciding motions, and the like, or at the appellate level. So there are folks, and there is something called the Judicial College, that helps judges develop and refine their professional skills over the course of a career. But like so many other jobs in our society, no, there isn't the day after you're elected, go to school and spend 3 months or 6 months learning how to be a judge.
We have joining us by phone, we have 12th Assembly District Democratic Representative in the state of Wisconsin, Fred Kessler, who's been involved in writing legislation about judges. Good morning, Representative Kessler, and thanks for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure. I want to say hello to Peter, who's a good friend.
Always good to hear from you, Fred.
I
might also say that Fred has a spouse who sits on the Court of Appeals in Wisconsin.
That's correct. And so I've been sort of a trial judge. She's been an appellate judge, and now I'm in the back as a member of the legislature. And I've secured the bench both by appointment and by election in separate races. So I've been on both sides. But what I wanted to comment on is I put a proposal forward, a constitutional amendment, that would basically provide for the appointment of justices on the Supreme Court. And I was stunned with the amount of opposition and the number of people who I would have anticipated were concerned all sort of felt, well, we have to have elections. It's the people's right to have elections. And I received some criticism for proposing appointment for the Supreme Court. So I think there's sort of a mixed view among citizens of Wisconsin of what's the right way to select justices on the court.
Why did you feel that we might want to switch to having our Supreme Court justices appointed rather than elected?
I think the two elections that two of the last three elections worried me a little bit about what I thought was the excessive involvement by special interest groups. That concerned me a bit that they were trying to pick people who would be sympathetic to them. And I wasn't sure I thought that was going to impose the fair and impartial justice that we want. And then, of course, nationwide, we saw similar elections occur in other states, particularly in West Virginia, where a owner of a coal mine, conglomerate, was seeking to pick his own justices because he had a pending case.
As you talk to your constituents and those who give you an opinion on this, what do you think they feel about Wisconsin's court system? Do they have confidence that if they go before the court, they'll get a decision based on the law and impartiality?
I think that is the case, but I think there's also this sort of underlying Jacksonian democracy concept that we ought to be able to elect everybody to every office, and that a citizen's rights are jeopardized if people receive appointments, particularly if they receive appointments that are not subject later to an election.
Thank you for your comments. Professor Rofus, care to follow up on any of that?
I do. Let me make a handful of points. Number one, let's remember that a fair number of the justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court got there originally by gubernatorial appointment and then got the advantages of incumbency. Second, more fundamentally, to Representative Kessler's point, the fact that the electoral system produces controversy and even outrage is not necessarily a justification for abandoning it. And that's because, third, I don't discern that gubernatorial appointment of judges of our state's highest court produces any higher quality I don't think the process is better or produces necessarily a better result than election. Each method of judicial selection has its substantial flaws, substantial shortcomings. And so for me, I'm quite ambivalent on the matter. I think I was far more an advocate of what Representative Kessler is suggesting maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago. But ironically, I don't think that it follows that merely because we have had tempestuous races with a fair amount of influence exercised by a small number of interest groups means that gubernatorial appointments would be free of those same influences or somehow produce better results, better people, more judge-like judges.
I want to thank Representative Kessler for joining us this morning. We have a bunch of other calls to get to. We need to take a break, and when we come back, we'll go back to the phones and find out what other people are thinking about this topic. And we're talking about how Wisconsin selects its judges. Do you like the way we do it here? Do you feel it's important to be able to vote? Would you prefer to see judges appointed on some sort of merit system? Do you have an idea? What is your idea on how we ought to do this? So far, I think the conclusion we can reach here is there is no perfect plan, and that's probably something that we all knew intellectually going into this. There's a flaw in every system. Do you like the way we do it here in Wisconsin? Would you like to see it change? Or is it something that, you know, hey, why are you doing this topic? We don't care about it. You can let us know that, too. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number. If you get a busy signal, send us an email. The address is talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. It's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 1041. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next hour, Larry Mueller is in. Fans of public television's Antiques Roadshow will want to tune in after 11. Larry's guest is Roadshow executive producer Marsha Bembo. She's the author of Antiques Roadshow Behind the Scenes, an insider's guide to PBS's number one weekly show. That's coming up next hour with Larry Mueller. This hour, we're talking about the system that Wisconsin uses to select its judges. They all have to stand for election. Many get appointed first to fill vacancies, and then they become incumbents in the next election cycle. What produced this program in terms of where this idea came from, several articles in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel recently about the state Supreme Court and some dissonance there in terms of the way people viewed certain judges and whether they should recuse themselves from certain cases and so forth. I just thought it would be an interesting hour to talk about this, and something most of us don't pay much attention to and don't always know a whole lot about. So my guest helping us to sort through this and give us some insight into how we do things in Wisconsin and why it matters is Peter Rofus, Professor of Law, Associate Dean for Academic Affairs, and Director of Part-Time Legal Education at Marquette University. Professor, we have other people who want to join us on the phone. Let's take a call from Bob in Appleton next. Bob, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm a retired lawyer who did practice trial law in this area for over 30 years, but I have no longer a dog in this fight, so I could offend a local judge and not worry about it. I have two comments. One is, it has always bothered me that district attorneys or assistant district attorneys seem to think that becoming a judge is just part of their career track. And because of the publicity that they may have gained as district attorneys, they're frequently elected. And that's bothered me because I think we need to have had lawyers with trial experience or private practice experience on the bench in order to get a more rounded bench. And the other comment I had was when Outagamie County built its new Justice Center, in the early 90s, they set up a security system, which I've always felt isolated judges from the lawyers who practice before them. And if those judges don't elect to come to local bar association meetings or other group events, they're pretty much cut off. Whereas before the Justice Center was built, the judges were exposed to lawyers. I mean, one of my partners became a judge, and when he was a judge, I could wander down the hall, walk into his chambers, get a cup of coffee with his secretary. He'd come out, we'd chit-chat. And that just isn't possible anymore in Outagamie County. And I've always thought that that had a tendency to isolate judges from the lawyers that practiced before them, unless they made a conscious effort to go out and talk to the lawyers and see how life in the real world is. My comment.
Well, before I ask Professor Rofus to respond to that, Bob, why is it important to you that judges not be isolated?
Because if they are, they're just not learning what goes on in the world of lawyers who are practicing law in everyday cases. I mean, for example, a judge might say, I'm going to set a pretrial at 10 o'clock on Monday morning, and then along comes Monday morning, and there's an emergency in your office, and you call and you ask the judge, can we adjourn this a little bit? I need some time. And the judge will say, no, that's when I've set this pretrial. And it's almost as if they've forgotten, if they ever did, what it's like to practice law in the real world. And that has always bothered me.
Okay. Professor?
The caller makes two perceptive points. I want to devote my reply principally to the first, although I sympathize a bit, don't know Outagamie County all that well. I sympathize a bit with the second as well, although there's a paradox there. We want our judges, on the one hand, to be isolated to do their work, and there are security concerns as well. Let's take the first point, which I think is the most powerful and meaningful one of the two. And that point has to do with prosecutors believing, as the caller said, that part of their career track is to be a judge. I share the observation of the caller. Like the caller, I have no dog in this fight either. I have noticed that the trial bench in Wisconsin in particular is dominated with folks who've been assistant DAs, sometimes assistant USAs. There seems to be a dearth of civil knowledge and experience on the trial court bench. And I would agree with the caller that a well-rounded bench, diversity in all its forms, not merely in the color of a person's skin or the genitalia that one has, is crucial for an effective judiciary. So I think the caller is absolutely right that the notion that prosecutors, merely by being prosecutors, have a constitutional right to a seat on the bench is a problematic one, and that we do need people with deep experience the practice of law in contexts other than prosecuting crime. I think that is a crucial point, one that's been talked about for a number of years. Whether it's going to change is open to question, and I'm not sure I have much optimism about that. But there are plenty of folks sitting in prosecutors' offices all around the state who believe, a judgeship is the next thing for me, and by prosecuting crime, that's my next step. And I think the caller is absolutely right that we need a more diverse and well-rounded bench that includes people with deep experience in civil matters.
Yeah, well, given what we've said about how the electorate looks at judges, I mean, name recognition is how you get elected. Most of us probably don't understand the difference between civil and criminal law and think the law is the law. And so how do we get to that point, I guess, is, you know, and there isn't a good answer to that necessarily, but it's a paradox. Maybe we can just leave it at that.
Okay.
Because, district attorneys would have higher visibility, and that's what gets you elected.
Well, again, we're talking mostly about assistant DAs. We are talking about DAs sometimes, but we're talking mostly about ADAs, assistant district attorneys, assistant U.S. attorneys, many of whom do fabulous work under gruesome conditions with enormous caseloads. But doesn't necessarily, again, acquire the skill set to be good judges, particularly good trial court judges.
All right, let's see. Let's take Mary in Muskego next. Mary, good morning. Mary, is your radio turned down? I think we lost Mary. How about Pam in Madison? Hi, Pam.
How are you?
Pretty good. Go ahead.
A couple of comments. Actually, while I was listening, it made me realize I have no idea what judges do. I don't know what a circuit court judge does, so of course I'm going to elect somebody on name recognition because the process is invisible to me. But the other point that I maybe care more about is the point about illegal and legal and just and unjust. And illegal and legal seems to be an input. And who has control or authority over that? What is the experience base, among those people who make those decisions? And then just and unjust seems to be an output. And is that solely within the judge's discretion? And is there an ethic that comes with being a judge that's shared or emphasized in law school? So those were my questions.
Pam, thanks for the call. Professor?
There's a cluster of issues that perhaps need to be unpacked, and we're not going to be able to unpack them all by the provocative sort of set of statements and questions. Let's start with legal and illegal. In our system, for the most part, we look to the legislature with the governor's signature to make law. Okay? And one of the great myths in our system is we don't want judges making law. We want judges applying law. That's something we hear in every judicial campaign. So for the most part, our laws are made in Madison, signed or vetoed by the governor, overridden. It's those laws that trial judges and appellate judges are dealing with, for the most part. There's also what's called the common law, judge-made law, that is perfectly acceptable and governs a host of areas of human relations. The just and unjust point, I don't fully follow the input-output distinction that the caller was making, but for instance, judges have some discretion at the sentencing phase of a criminal matter to impose what, in their view, after being briefed on the matter, is a fair or unfair, a just or unjust sentence. within the confines of guidelines. There's so much we could talk about with regard to just and unjust, legal and illegal. We could get into natural law. I'm not sure we can go to all the places that the caller's comments and questions implicated in the next few moments. It's a rich set of observations.
Well, maybe there's another show in this someplace. And we only have about 7 more minutes of this one, so we don't want to get too deep into anything. We've got Mary in Muskego who's ready to talk to us now. Let's go there. Mary, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good.
All right, that's fine. Well, first off, I think your guest, well, what he's saying is just a lot of brilliance as far as I'm concerned, because his answers are so down-to-earth and, you know, filled with common sense. And I'm not asking a question more than I'm giving a comment, and that is I wondered if he ever thought of running for judgeship wherever, because you seem to know what a judge ought to be and how he ought to conduct himself, and it seems to me that you would make a very fine judge. Now, the thing is, I'm just John Q. Public out here, just an ordinary American. But the main thing is that I hear and I read so much of the process or the structure of things, and we are forgetting about the down-to-earth thing, and that is ethics. If a man, this is what we depend upon. I, as an American, cannot possibly, you know, do all things that the brilliance of men or women can do for our country. But what we have to depend upon is that they've read the book of values. They've read about ethics. And if they have that, then it seems to me the other seems, just getting the office, of course, that's kind of hard, too. But that's the greatest thing I think we need.
Professor, you have a fan.
And I think your callers ought to know that my mother lives out of state, and so the caller is not my mother. In fact, the caller probably thinks more highly of me than my mother does. Let's take the second part of the caller's comments first, and that is, having good judges is really important, and the system rests on that. It rests on a variety of other things, too, but we can't escape the fact that having good judges really matters. The caller used the word values and ethics, and all that is important, and some of it's bound up in the law, some of it is bound up in the way people comport themselves, the things they do and refrain from doing. But I agree with all that. As far as whether I've considered putting myself up to the voters, candidly, I don't have the personal wherewithal to run a statewide race. And so the answer is, although at times the job sounds appealing, I don't have the right, shall we say, the typical CV of the person who gets appointed by a governor or elected by the voters. And so I appreciate the caller's comments, and I think she's right about many things, and I think she's also got very good taste.
Mary, thank you for the call. Let's take a call from Larry in Stevens Point. Larry, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question, I guess, about the state Supreme Court. Two elections ago, the mantra that the winning candidate used was that he would judge by the strict letter of the law, and that's mostly what I heard from him. I always thought that the Supreme Court was there because there might not be a strict letter of the law. In other words, the law was not clear and it needed interpretation. Am I wrong in this?
You're at least half right that the cases that make it to the state's highest court are there sometimes because there is a conflict in the circuits, the courts of appeals around the state, and that the law needs clarification. So phrases like, I'm going to decide cases by the letter of the law, phrases like strict constructionalist, phrases like, I'm not going to make law, I'm going to apply law. These are catchphrases that public relations people and media specialists advise candidates to trot out because they attract certain kinds of folks and get certain votes, but they're essentially empty vessels. And so I sympathize with the caller that the very act of deciding and declaring a decision in a case that the highest seven justices in our state decide is often amounts to creating law and not merely applying law. That distinction on which so much public relations rhetoric rests is in many respects, not all. There are easy cases, but in many respects, it's mythical and it's used to manipulate voters and make voters think that the act of judging is considerably more more simple than it really is.
And I think that's where we're going to have to leave it. Professor, thanks for spending this hour with us.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Peter Rofus, Professor of Law, Associate Dean for Academic Affairs, and Director of Part-Time Legal Education at Marquette University. Rhonda Fanning produced this program. Beto McQuaid handled on-air production this morning. If you'd like to listen to it again or any other Kathleen Dunn episode, you can go to our website, WPR.org. Go to the Kathleen Dunn page, and, you'll find the listen link right there. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. Be back tomorrow. It's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.